It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 273. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies' opening series against the Atlanta Braves. The Phillies, the only undefeated team in Major League Baseball, and we're going to break it all down for you here over the next 45 minutes or so. Joining me to do that, as they do every week, is Justin Clue, the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on Twitter, at @Justin_Clue, and Liz Rocher, fantastic sports columnist for Yahoo Sports. Follow Liz on Twitter @LizRocher. Justin, man, we are undefeated, 3-0, 162-0 is still in play, my friend.
I've been waiting to talk about this all weekend, frankly. The best thing that came out of this weekend, other than the like entire weekend, was that moment after Bryce Harper hit his first home run and he came out of the dugout and everything. And he just came to this realization that I think Bryce Harper might be in a city now that matches his intensity, which might not have been the case before. So it's fun to see him playing around with that and just being like, there's this reservoir of like rage and fervor that I can tap into whenever I want with just a wave of my hand. And he proved that stepping out of the dugout. We had two curtain calls in the first two games. I mean, that kind of tells you where we're at emotionally.
No doubt about it. I mean, go ahead, Liz. Yeah.
Philly fans are super thirsty. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we were jonesing for something like this, you know, because we've seen the Sixers come together and the Eagles won the Super Bowl and almost made it back last year or, you know, several months ago. So Philly's fans are thirsty. But, you know, I think Justin's absolutely right that, you know, he's finally in a city where, you know, Washington was never going to treat him like this because he didn't choose them. He was just part of their team.
Yeah.
And it's easy for fans to take like something like that for granted. But Phillies fans never will, at least for the next couple of years, because he chose the Phillies.
Right, right.
And watching him sort of realize, I made the right choice. I am beloved. You know, watching him make the right choice makes me feel... I mean, vindicated isn't the right word because it's more than that. It's happiness and all that stuff. But I feel good that you know, he really was a good fit for this city with his personality. Mm-hmm. Justin, I remember that tweet that you retweeted, something like, Bryce Harper is too nice to ever play in Philly. They'll eat him alive. I remember reading that and I'm like, who?
Man, I think that was like a WAPO guy too. Like that was somebody.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. I remember reading that and thinking that is no way true. I've seen him play. I've wanted to punch him in the face. You know, there's
in a good
no way.
Way
that, like, exactly. Like, off the field, he seems like a super nice guy. You know, he's young. You know, him and his wife will be starting a young family soon. Like, I'm sorry. They're just so perfect.
Yeah. No, I think even more than just like it's a city that, you know, loves him. They just match their intensity levels. And of all the stupid things Alex Rodriguez said on the Sunday Night Baseball telecast last night, and he is as terrible as advertised, by the way.
For the love of God.
The one thing he did say right after the home run was that Philadelphia is a city that is more intense about its sports teams. In Washington, D.C., the fans go to the games, and there are fans, but there's a level of intensity in Philadelphia that is there's just not a comparison between Philly and Washington. I mean, you saw it every time he ran out to right field at the start of these three games so far. Those deep bows that he took to the fans in right field screaming his name. The curtain calls, like you mentioned, Justin, that curtain call on Saturday was the most electric thing I've seen in that stadium probably since Roy Halladay's no-hitter in the playoffs back in 2010. I was so pumped when he came out and raised his fists up and got the crowd going. And that's the other thing about this team that is so cool. And it all revolves around Bryce Harper is the emotion and the celebrations that these guys are doing after home runs. Like, this team has, they remind me a lot of the 2017 Eagles that you referenced a second ago. I think it's just a matter of, you know, the personality on the team combined with getting off to a fast start. You can tell that this is a really talented team, but I think you see a growing chemistry with this team too. These guys all really like each other. You know, watching Michael Franco and Bryce Harper do their part of the home run celebration in front of the dugout. And I mean, it's just fun. And that was the thing that we haven't seen in this town. And really, even, I would even say during the last few years of that great run, Justin, that it was kind of like business. It was business, you know, they wanted to get back to the World Series.
Joyless.
Yeah, but it was a lot of grind. It was just a lot of grinding. And this team is, it's just fun. That's the thing I took away from this series as much as anything else. Yes, the Phillies outclassed the Braves. They're the only undefeated team in baseball. They won 10-4, 8-6, and 5-1. They outscored the Braves 23-11. It's only the sixth time in the last half century the Phillies have started a season 3-0. It's the first time they've done it since 2011. But even more than all of that, this was fun. Fun baseball is back in Philadelphia. That was my big takeaway from the weekend.
Imagine Cliff Lee or Roy Halladay out there trying to work the crowd like before a game. It was a different kind of cool. Like the intensity and the brooding, like all of that was like that. That's what we knew we had. That was what was effective for them. And that was, you know, we played that up as best we could as fans. The characterizations were like always fun to apply to these guys. But that was, they were never going to be cheerleaders. And Bryce Harper doesn't have to do any of this stuff. He could be completely disengaged from the fans outside of the stuff than the outside of the stuff the team would have him do. And he could just be like, yeah, I'm here. Obviously the money played a role, but I want to be here. But you know, he doesn't have to go out there and pump his fist or do curtain calls or get people all riled up. And you know, a lot of that'll change. And I think Jess Mendoza mentioned that on the broadcast last night, something about how like, oh, you know, enjoy this now, 'cause it's not always going to be this way in 13 years. It's like, yeah, no kidding. It's just kind of nice to set this, this base of, not just choosing here and playing here, because at the end of the day, we all know the reason he's here is $330 million. It's not like he would have come to Philadelphia if they hadn't been the biggest player in free agency. At the same time, acquiescing to his surroundings, as new as they are to him, that's really, like we've said, this guy really knows what he's doing as far as endearing himself to the city and getting everybody, you know, the baseball helps, the home runs help, but yeah, being so engaging and willing to like work with the fans to get excited, that's completely extracurricular. And that's made this really cool and really fun to see, in a way that, you're right, at the end of 2011, we liked how serious our team was, like with Chase Utley. Like, these were not people who were gonna, like, you know, they'll sign autographs for kids, but they're not people who are gonna go out there and do some, you know, do some fist pumping before the game. So it's a different kind of cool, and a kind that we haven't experienced here in Philadelphia for a while.
Go ahead, Liz.
I just wanted to jump in and say, like, as far as like those old teams, you know, Justin and I did, you know, a year long reminiscence or season long reminiscence of the 2008 Phillies. And something I talked about a lot, or periodically, was how different baseball looks and feels, you know, even with the, you know, fans cheering so loudly. You just look at the dugout, even in 2008, and it's like a different world. It's insane how people think that, you know, the whole let the kids play campaign where it's like MLB is imploring its broadcasters to stop it.
Yeah.
Stop just coming down so hard on these players. You know, it didn't happen overnight. It happened gradually, you know, over time. And the Phillies in 08 through 2011, like, there was joy, but it was different. It was muted. It was a lot more, as you know, Justin said, it's a lot more businesslike.
Yeah.
And it's just such a difference to see. I mean, I don't think people can really appreciate it until they go back and watch a full game from 2008 just to see, because the baseball moments are still great. But in between them, you're watching people sit wordlessly in the dugout, chewing sunflower seeds, thinking about baseball and life, I guess. It's so different, and it's so much fun. And I'm trying to make sure I appreciate this time around as much as of it as possible. I hope that's one thing that's changed for Philadelphia fans in general, that we can all sort of remember, hey, this is going to go away someday.
Yeah.
Let's appreciate every single morsel of this and the happiness and the youth. Let's appreciate all this now.
Yeah. And I think the thing to remember is, you know, one of the things that was really interesting, I thought, was Rhys Hoskins talking about what it was like when Harper hit the home run on Saturday. And he hit another one on Sunday night, and it was another bomb, and the fans went just as crazy. But the one on Saturday, which was the first one, using Nick Williams' bat, by the way, Bryce Harper has to only use Nick Williams' bats from now on, because he crushed two home runs and a double using Nick Williams' bats. But even the dugout, even the players understand the impact of Bryce Harper and those home runs. He said they were all saying that the dugout just went crazy when Harper hit that bomb into the second deck. And, you know, it's a matter, I think, what we're seeing here with Harper and with this team is the reason it matches the city so well is Harper has like a football player's intensity. And this is, you know, this is a baseball town when the team is going well and there's good players and personalities. But really, Philadelphia is a football town, first and foremost. And when your star player kind of has the emotional intensity of a football player, that's what it reminded me of when he came out of the dugout for that curtain call on Saturday. That kind of raw emotion is what this town gravitates towards, Liz. So a football player's mentality. And that's what I see. That's why Bryce Harper was such a good fit, is because of all the players in baseball, I think he most resembles an Eagles player, you know, as far as playing to the crowd.
Now you're just trying to get under Mike Trout's skin, and I dig it, John. I love that personal passive aggressive attack.
Yeah.
That is a brilliant move. All right.
Yeah. Thanks. I've been working on that. I had to, yeah.
I think you're right. I never thought of it that way, but he wears his emotions baseball wise. Mm-hmm. He wears them on his sleeve. He's, you know, that's a reason why people don't like him. Who was it? Hunter Strickland?
Yeah.
Threw a ball at his face or something. Like, screw that guy. But it's why players don't like him, you know? It's why some opposite players don't like him. And I think that's something that, you know, effortlessly endears him to Phillies fans. Yeah, I mean, there's so much more to say, but it's all, you know, sort of the same. He's sort of perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He's perfect for this town.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. It's been so weird I've been trying to sort of temper my excitement because we're three games into the season, and as nice as it feels to beat the crap out of the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to remember and
savor
this.
It's still just early. Yeah,
it's still so early.
Yeah.
And like, I want to temper all my pronouncements. Like, my fiance said something recently about, like, this is so incredible. This is the most amazing. I'm like, let's simmer down.
Well,
this team is not the most anything yet. We're seeing them in the fetal stage.
I will say that, and I don't know if you guys agree with me, Justin, that I think this has been the best start to a season that I can ever remember. I mean, I intimately remember the 93 season when they started off with a three-game sweep of the Astros in Houston, and that was a place the Phillies hadn't won a whole lot. It was hard to win in Houston at the Astrodome during that stretch, but they came out, and it was the starting pitching pitched great in that series, and you had a team that we didn't expect a lot from come out and get to a hot start, and we're like, oh, that was interesting. That was a really fun series, but it wasn't as intense and it wasn't as dominant as the Phillies were in this series. And the Braves won the National League East last year, and they looked totally overwhelmed in this series. I mean, you had Harper hit two home runs, McCutchen hit two, Franco hit two, JT Realmuto and Hoskins each hit one. Hoskins hit a grand slam on opening day. They hit eight home runs in the series. They scored 23 runs in the series, and the Braves just looked overwhelmed. That's why this, to me, was the most impressive. I know they started off 3-0 in 2011 too, but maybe it's just because the way they won these games was by the offense bludgeoning the Braves pitching staff instead of, you know, tightly pitched games. But this, to me, I can't remember a better opening three games, even going back before 1993. 93 was the best start to any season I could have remembered. I think these three games beat those three games. What do you think?
Yeah, I could agree with that. I think you did bring up the most recent times that they started the season 3-0, and I think those are the only comparable situations. Obviously, the first one that comes to mind is 2011. I think that takes us back to what we were just talking about, that when you bring those games up where they played the Astros again that year, I believe, in the first three games, and I think that was, you bring them up.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was the Astros. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking it was the Nats when Halladay won 11-1 in opening game, but that was 2010. So sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
That's okay. But when you talk about those games, you're talking about Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, and Roy Oswalt, which, as we just said, were different kinds of stars. They were older than Bryce Harper is now, I believe. They're just further along in their career, and just different types of players who factored more on their intensity and sort of quiet brooding than anything else. And like, brilliant pitching performance is great, obviously. If that's the Phillies fans were like, yeah, if this is the kind of baseball we're going to see, then this is obviously something we can get behind. And there were plenty of games. That this team put out an elite starting pitcher and then turned the other team's pitcher into an elite starting pitcher by not scoring any runs for basically no reason. And now just seeing the opposite of that, not the polar opposite, but just seeing them score more runs and have that be the reason why they're an exciting team. That's really made these three games feel different. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a talk of like playoff atmosphere at the ballpark already, and it's opening day.
It's March.
That's cartoonish. Yeah. That shouldn't be. But at the end of the day, you can't change the fact that when Rhys Hoskins hit that home run, the stadium rattled so much it sent the Braves broadcast into technical difficulties. At the end of the day, facts are facts. And yeah, I mean, I think we all know that a home run is going to get people more excited than a strikeout. I think obviously context is important, but at the same time, Bryce Harper second decking a meatball is going to send people into a fervor. Whereas like, you know, Aaron Nola striking out eight guys is like, yeah, all right, polite applause. This is great. So I think this is the most dynamic way baseball can happen to fans. And the Phillies have a team full of guys who can just make that style of baseball happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what everybody comes to the ballpark to see. I mentioned that last night, everyone was waiting for one thing to happen last night, and it happened in the seventh inning when Harper hit his home run. Everyone was just sitting there waiting for Bryce Harper to hit a home run. That's all they wanted to see.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think, as we look back at this weekend and we look for something to take away from this weekend, and of course this is the podcast in which we are going to overreact to the very small sample size of three games. We all are cognizant of the fact there's 159 games left, but it's been a long rebuild, and what we saw in Philadelphia this weekend is something I haven't seen before with a Phillies team, and this is a Phillies team I think unlike any we've ever seen before. My big takeaway from this weekend is I really wonder how good this offense is and how good it can be historically when you compare it to other Phillies offenses. It's too early to say it's the best of all time, and it's obvious it's probably going to be too early to say that for the next few months, but I'm just looking at the names and I'm looking at what they did this weekend, Liz, and what I really enjoyed was how there is a combination of factors going on here. There are guys in this lineup who are grinders, who will work counts, who will get themselves into good hitters counts. They drew a lot of walks this weekend. But you also have a couple of guys in this lineup who also like to swing the bat and aren't going to sit there and take seven or eight pitches per plate appearance. I think it's a really good mix. And when you look at the 2019 lineup and you compare it to the two best lineups that I can remember in recent memory, the 2009 lineup where you had Howard and Utley, Rollins, Ibanez, Victorino, Wirth, but then you had Feliz and a light-hitting Ruiz at the end of the lineup in your 7-8 hole. And in 93, you had Kruk and then Hollins and Dykstra and Dalton, but you also had a bunch of platoons and Morandini Duncan and Cavilla Thompson, Chamberlain Eisenreich. This has the potential, I think, to be the best lineup of all time. If things play out the rest of the season, Liz, the way they played out this weekend, my big takeaway from this weekend is we could be looking at the best Phillies lineup of all time for the simple fact of, unlike in 2009 and 93, there is no bottom of the lineup. With Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco hitting 7-8, there's no easy out for any pitcher with this lineup right now.
I mean, Cesar Hernandez, who's been one of, you know, the last, you know, half of last season accepted, he's been one of the best hitters the Phillies have had during the entire rebuild.
Yeah, when he's not had a broken foot, it's amazing. Yeah. He has been. You're right.
Yeah, and he is down in the 7 hole, and Michael Franco seems real comfortable in the 8 hole. I mean, that's really, he seems to really like it there. He doesn't, I mean, and what's nice is these guys are being, you know, they were moved around, not for randos they picked up. You know, it's
that right, helps.
For JT, like, of course they're going to move down in the order for two dudes who are going to unquestionably make, you know, the lineup better. You know, it's just, it's, we saw it, like, they were, I mean, they spent a decent portion of, you know, the first few innings, there were issues. Like, you can't really trust the ESPN strike zone box. Your eyes, don't trust the box. But yeah, I remember screaming at the, in the first inning, I'm screaming at the television, stop swinging. Why are you swinging? Because they got themselves, like, two straight hitters. Like, I think they got ahead and then swung themselves out of hitters' counts into a strikeout. And it didn't take them long to figure it out. You know, they just sort of continued to chip away. But with that in mind, I want to say my one takeaway from this weekend is that at some point this season, the Phillies and Braves are going to actually fight.
Well, I want to get to that in just a second, because you're right.
They're absolutely going to fight. Man. I think beyond that, I think
this series really had everything.
The Phillies are going to fight some teams this year, at least one, because they're real loud. They're really excited. You know, they come, you know, I want to see what happens when they bring that to a visiting stadium.
What did they say? Yeah, they just took that poll that other players said Bryce Harper was the most overrated player in baseball. I mean, you get the sense some guys just don't like him for whatever reason. Like, we're obviously outside of that circle. But yeah, it seems like there's plenty of guys who I'm not willing to bet that any of the scrapping that happened last night was actually done on purpose as far as the getting hit by pitches. But my point being, I think that more teams are eventually, people are going to be throwing at this team on purpose, because that's how some pitchers choose to communicate their emotions. And I think some people don't like Bryce Harper, and they don't like this team with Bryce Harper on it. I wouldn't like them either if I had to play them.
No, yeah, for sure. It was like when the Phillies got Lenny Dykstra. You hated Lenny Dykstra when he was playing against you. When he was on your team, you loved him to pieces. And let's take our first break here, because up next I want to talk about the Rhys Hoskins hit by pitch and retaliation and all that kind of stuff. So we'll get into that next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, and picking up on what Justin just said before we hit the break there, for those of you who may not have seen the game, just after Bryce Harper's home run, I think it was in the seventh inning last night he hit that home run, the next batter, Rhys Hoskins, took a fastball just under the chin. It glanced off his shoulder, it looked like, and I tweeted it out, what it looked like from the camera behind home plate. It was terrifying, and you can understand why the home plate umpire tossed the Braves pitcher immediately. He didn't give a warning. He chucked that guy out of the game the second the ball hit the backstop. I mean, I don't even think the ball had hit the backstop yet when the umpire had tossed the Braves pitcher from the game. Hoskins was dusted three times in this series. And, you know, Justin, I think you mentioned it a second ago that the Phillies did a lot of celebrating, and Bryce Harper was the leader in those home run celebrations. And it looks like the Phillies are going to be a team that does that this year, which just, again, makes them so much fun. And that's why they remind me of the 2017 Eagles, who celebrated every touchdown with choreographed dance moves and skits. You know, for lack of a better word, I mean, they had almost like a Saturday Night Live skit after every touchdown in 2017. The Phillies seem to be.
Did you see what they did when they were on base? It wasn't a home run, but when they got on base, they
wave
like
at each other.
Emphatic kid waving.
Yes,
at the dugout.
That's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing.
So endearing.
Yes. Yeah, they wave like with an exaggerated hand motion. Somebody told me that that's from Fortnite. That there's a character in Fortnite where they do like a little kid wave like that, and it's hysterical.
It's not just from life, from experiencing life and children and having.
I like that
movies.
So much better though.
Yeah, no,
somebody into second base, set up a TV and a PlayStation, and just play Fortnite on second base. I think that'd be great.
Somebody sent me a video capture of a Fortnite character doing that, and I had to say, I think they're right. I think it is. Either way, it's hysterical. But that's the thing. This is contrary to the traditions of baseball, where you hit a home run, you put your head down, and you act like you're going to a funeral. The Phillies are not going to be that kind of a team this year. Yeah, exactly. And so the Phillies did a lot of that in this series. Bryce Harper specifically, his home run celebrations outside the dugout with Hoskins, and then with
everybody.
Franco,
he's got a different handshake for everybody on the team. He said, "That's
right."
He said he wants to his goal.
Yeah, how much that takes up so much time? You know,
yeah, so much memory.
But it's worth it because it's a, you know, it's a team building thing. It's you know, they're involving everyone. Like he said, he'd never been on a team where, you know, this had happened, where, you know, he wanted to have a handshake with everyone. I'm like, oh, my heart is melting. Stop it.
Yes. No, it's great. But the other side of this, Justin, as you mentioned, is that the Phillies may get some brushback pitches. They may get dusted because in baseball's parlance, you're showing up the other team. And so I what did you guys think?
Better than them.
Right. Well, that's what it is, too. But do you think that, Justin, do you think that the Braves pitcher was throwing at Hoskins last night? Do you think it was intentional? Because I know it seemed as though, because it was a cold night, we heard, you know, there were a lot of walks. It seemed like pitchers had trouble controlling their pitches. Jake Arrieta, after the game, said the ball basically felt like he was throwing a cue ball at times. So it just seemed the timing was too close for that to be a pitch that got away from the pitcher, in my opinion. It looked intentional to me, but what do you think?
Yeah, initially my guess was my instinct is that it's so early in the season. There's no way anybody could be that mad that quick at a specific team. But at the same time, looking back at it, yeah, I also thought the ump was really quick with the hook. But looking back at it now, it's like, yeah, it's kind of tough to believe the opposite is true. It's kind of I can't imagine.
It happened the pitch after the home run.
And it's been Reese repeatedly. It's the same team. They're out there getting brutalized. They have to be frustrated. I don't know if you've checked in on Braves fan base of late, but they're
not
obviously having a good time.
There are good people in the Braves fan base, but even they're all the same now because they're all using the same picture of Tiger Woods as their Twitter avatar. They've all kind of lost it collectively. Go check in on Demetrius Bell at FERGOE Fergo. He writes for Talking Chop and a few other places. He's a good dude, a Braves fan, still a good dude. But check in on his timeline, and I think you'll get some kind of idea of how many of them have collectively lost it with this first series combined with the fact that their team sucked it in the offseason and did nothing. So,
and I just bring that up because that at this point, and especially last night, I think the Braves might have been at a breaking point. You know, like, they might have been at a point where it was like, all right, look, we obviously got to probably a lot like the Phillies were at the end of the opening series last season, where it was like, all right, look, we have a soft reboot here and really figure out what it is we're doing, because they had a pretty terrible opening series. But at no point in this series did it seem like the Braves had any of these games in hand. They had a couple of leads, but never too big. So with all that frustration, I think somebody's possibly got it in their head, possibly reliever Shane Carl, that he was going to hit somebody with a pitch. And why not the guy who hits after the guy who keeps destroying your baseballs? The guy who's sort of at the center of all of this madness, who's like the reason why this game was on primetime. You know, Bryce Harper's going to get a little chin music this year, I'm sure. But Reese Hoskins, JT Realmuto, these guys hitting behind him are also going to have to face that, because they're just going to be good enough and cocky enough to draw that sort of retribution. And that's apparently just how baseball players respond to each other. We've seen it too many times. For that reason, you know, Reese was already barking at him on his way down to first base last night. This is very easy to see this evolving into a full-on rivalry, which is something else we wanted to see as a byproduct of the team getting better and of the division getting better. So, I think if it wasn't the case last night, it'll be the case soon enough that the Phillies are going to have targets on their back. The good news is this lineup is so formidable that for an opposing pitcher, I mean, you could throw out just about anybody, and you could make the argument that they're doing it to get back at him for some sort of offensive contribution.
Yeah, no kidding. And Liz, you know, as we look back at last night, and these teams don't play each other again until mid-June, I saw a number of people on the timeline saying the Phillies have to retaliate. They have to drill Freeman or Acuna. And I asked a poll, and as of this recording, 1,367 people had voted, and three quarters said that no, the Phillies should not have retaliated last night against Atlanta. Now, some people were saying they should wait until later, so it's not like they were viscerally opposed to the idea of drilling Acuna or Freeman in the ribs with a fastball or something like that. But there were many who had the correct opinion, in my opinion, that you retaliate best by winning. And the best part about Hoskins getting drilled last night is he scored after getting put on first base. But there is something, the argument that you protect your players by throwing at the other guys. Another team won't be as likely to throw at Rhys Hoskins if they know that Vince Velasquez is going to drill Acuna in the ribs if Rhys Hoskins keeps getting thrown under his chin. So, there, you know, there's an old school, new school mentality towards that, and I think I know probably where we all fall on that timeline. But I wonder if there is an instance where, you know, drilling a guy in the ribs is acceptable. It doesn't seem like it, because throwing a baseball 95 miles an hour at someone seems like a pretty reckless thing to do.
Yeah, I actually had a conversation about this with someone, because I can see reasons why you would want to do it, and if you can hit them in the thigh. Hit them in the ribs, whatever it is. If you know you can do that, I don't think it's.
And pitchers say they can, Liz. They will swear that if I want to hit somebody, I can hit him right where I want to.
I don't think it's the greatest thing, but I can see it. It's just such a risk you're taking, because I don't necessarily think last night was intentional, but looking at who's behind the plate, and it was Brian McCann, who has returned after several seasons with the Astros, returned to his fun policing ways. I can see him calling for something like that. And because it was so cold, the ball got away from it and ended up under his chin.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I can say. So, I don't necessarily. Also, at this point, if they're not going to see each other again until June, don't even bother retaliating.
Yeah.
Because, the announcers are going to bring that up, and some of us might remember, but it's just like, here, let me retaliate, 2.5 months?
Well, memories are long.
We've seen
stuff carry over from the end of a season into spring training the next year.
That's so meaningless. Like, unless you can retaliate within the next week, maybe week and a half, I think, it's something you could discuss. I don't think it should be done necessarily, but you can discuss it. If it goes longer than that, I think it's stupid, because by that point, both teams have played enough games that whatever happened back then doesn't matter. Like, it went under his chin. It was scary. He lived. He yelled. The guy got ejected. We made enemies for the season with the Braves. And so now we can all move on, because, again, the best way to retaliate is continuing to beat the ever-loving crap out of them. And I'm all for that.
Justin, where do you fall on all this as far as retaliation? Is there ever a good time to do it or a good reason to do it?
Liz and I had one of our more interesting conversations on Continued Success about how we as baseball fans root to see bench clearing brawls, but then we come down on guys for throwing at pitchers, and it just makes you wonder what level of violence is the acceptable level of violence, where baseball's got this entertainment factor that, like, oh yeah, the old school, like, everybody, the bullpens are jogging in, this is great, versus, okay, you got to throw a fastball at somebody just because he threw a fastball at one of your teammates 3 months ago. If we lived in a world where I could believe every major league pitcher has the pinpoint control to hit a guy in the butt because he wants to, then I would say, yeah, okay, well then we should just do that then. Like, that's a relatively safe place to hit somebody. And if that's how it's done in the game, like, I'm sure the hitter understands that, then we've been watching it for decades and decades. So sure, why not? I just don't believe every pitcher that claims they have the control to do that has the control to do that. Otherwise, guys would never get hit in the head. And we've seen too many cases where a guy like Hunter Strickland holds on to this weird rage for, in his case, years before throwing at Bryce Harper. I think it was at least over 1 year. And it was for something that everyone was like, all right, we got to go into the archives for this one to remember what exactly is the slight Hunter Strickland has. Some guys are just more sensitive than others, and I think we learned Hunter Strickland is extremely sensitive. I just don't trust that. I would say the difference is how often does a bench clearing brawl really end with someone getting punched in the face? Usually there's some shoving. Maybe at its most dramatic, there's some, like, you know, giant 36 person shuffling of a group, like from one side of the infield to the other, right, as everyone tries to fight, but they can't. Whereas having all the time you need to, like, figure out how to throw a 95 mile an hour fastball at somebody that could very well hit their brain if you're aiming for their torso. Yeah, I think that's a lot more singular, and I just the possibility for disaster is much higher. So yeah, at the end of the day, what I can't get around is the same thing as you guys, that it just would be so much more gratifying to just beat them in the game.
You
just,
you can't
avoid that. Like, yeah, okay, a player gets hurt. Do you really feel good about yourself watching somebody roll around in the dirt, writhing in pain, holding their head? Yeah. And like, maybe if you're especially
the only
classless,
argument to do it. The only argument to do it, Justin, is if you feel like you're protecting,
right,
you know, Rhys Hoskins. That's the, and I don't know that actually is the case, but that's the argument for it, is that it's not to get back, or, you know, retaliate maybe isn't the best word to use to describe it, but it's to protect your hitters, your best hitters, from getting thrown at. And I don't know that actually protects anybody, but maybe it does. I don't know.
If from our point of view, if it doesn't, that makes sense. But if it's like within baseball, if that's how they view that, then like that's how they're going to go about it. That's the culture. And like, that might suck to us, but that's how they're going to settle it. And if everybody involved understands, even though they're not going to be happy, then like, whatever, that's how you're going to police yourselves. Then that's going to be how you police yourselves. At the same time, I think we've pointed out time and time again, the dangers and risks involved in this, and how nobody wants to see a star player go down and like watch his head fill with blood because somebody doesn't know how to control their fastball.
Right, exactly. And that's the danger. I mean, when you got these guys all throwing really hard, and I'm not convinced pitchers have good control, but pitchers also have the ability to lose pitches. And you, when you're talking about fastballs to the beam.
Jake Arrieta had 6 walks last night. Like,
yeah, especially on a cold night when you can't control the ball very well. And I fully admit that what Liz said is true. It's possible that he was trying to throw at Rhys Hoskins' rib cage or whatever, and because the ball was so slick and so cold that it got away from him and went real close to the guy's face. And Hoskins was understandably upset too, because remember, he took a foul ball off the jaw last year and had to wear the special Gazoo helmet. You know, I mean, he doesn't want to have to wear you know, another X-Men helmet.
I'll tell you something though, angry Rhys Hoskins is really doing it for me. I like Rhys Hoskins normally, but angry Rhys Hoskins getting up and just letting loose what was absolutely a string of expletives, like I said to Skin, like, oh, our baby's grown up. because I just can't tell you how great it is to watch him. Like, after making friends with Bryce Harper at the Home Run Derby last year, where it didn't seem like he knew anyone or was talking to anyone, and then, you know, you'd see him with Harper, like, at, you know, when the Phillies and Nationals were playing in the second half, and they were just sort of joking around and talking to each other, and now it's just sort of like the blossoming of a player who was, you know, went from being this, you know, this phenom in this limited time to going through some struggles last year to being, you know, what Gabe Kapler said after the game, he's sort of like the beating heart of this team, which is exactly what he is. And it's been really cool, even in just 3 games, to watch what everyone can do when the weight is equally distributed on everyone's shoulders.
And I gotta say, I'd much rather be on the team that's being thrown at than the team that's desperate enough to decide, well, I guess we should just try to hurt them than beat them, because we can't beat them.
That's a fair point for sure. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the Phillies starters performed here in the opening weekend of the season, and take a couple of phone calls, put a couple of phone calls out there from people who called into the voicemail, and take a look at what's up next for the Phillies here over the next week. We'll do that all up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So we've been talking about the offense and Bryce Harper and Rhys Hoskins this podcast, but the Phillies actually did have some pitchers on the team throw some pitches this weekend as well. And yes, they did. And you guys talked about Aaron Nola on your Continued Success podcast after opening day, and I talked a little bit about him on episode 272 of the podcast. So let's kind of focus in on Nick Pivetta and Jake Arrieta, who pitched games 2 and 3. And Pivetta struggled on Saturday. He looked a lot like the pitcher who we saw have struggles last year. So whatever the confidence he had in spring training didn't seem to be there. He seemed to be back to nibbling on Saturday. His velocity was not the same as it was in Clearwater. And that was my concern, too. We're seeing Pivetta throw 97, 98 in spring training when he'd never thrown that hard before. The worry was that the speed gun down there was off, or the Trackmaster, whatever it is they're using down there, was off. And he was back throwing 93, 94 miles an hour in his first game of the season here against the Braves. It's just one start, Liz, but what did you make of Pivetta's first outing here of 2019?
It was frustrating, but like, you know, in a different, less good way than Aaron Nola, you know, he was able to sort of limit some of the damage, but the offense bailed him out. The offense absolutely bailed him out, yeah, in the end. And I hope that gives, you know, it was his first start of the year, and I think... every pitcher who was here last year has memories of that, of needing to be perfect all the time. Like, not even being confident, I'm sure, sometimes about putting balls in play. Like, if I don't strike this guy out, the ball is going to dribble over to Scott Kingery in the enormous hole he leaves over at shortstop. So, you know, I think maybe hopefully it'll take, you know, a start or two for him to realize I have some breathing room. You know, yes, these games count, not, you know, unlike the ones in Clearwater, but, you know, I don't have to be perfect. I can pitch the way I want to pitch and let the chips fall, and the offense is going to be there to help me. So, yeah, it wasn't great, but it was one start. I'm hopeful to see what he will bring in the future. You know, a lot of teams wanted him this offseason, apparently. I'm trying to remember.
They did.
There was a snippet, I believe it was, what, ESPN? Someone said that, you know, he was the most asked after pitcher in the Phillies system. Everyone wanted him because they like his underlying spin rate or something. And so that's encouraging. There's absolutely potential there, and we know he's got it. He just sort of has to, you know, he just has to settle, because if it's there, he just has to bring it out.
Well, and that was the thing, Justin, too. I mean, he got burned by a Matt Joyce home run in the second game of the season, and it was because he was nibbling. You know, he fell behind 3-1. He just seemed to be afraid to throw Joyce anything to hit, but then came in with a fastball on 3-1.
Was it
Matt Joyce who hit the home run? Yeah, okay, and it just, you know, clobbered a home run off him, and that was the problem he had last year with runners on base. He would get into trouble because he'd start to nibble. He wouldn't trust his stuff. He still needs to get that changeup working to left-handed hitters to get them off his fastball. But he started nibbling, fell behind in the count, had to challenge him with a fastball, and it was a straight 93-mile-an-hour fastball that he missed his location with, and that's been the struggle with Pivetta.
If you're somebody who entered this season thinking that Nick Pivetta could be a key piece of the rotation, that he was on the cusp of a breakout year, then, I mean, nothing that's happened, unfortunately, can change your mind, given that, again, we're talking about one game and it was disappointing. It was exactly the kind of start you'd expect from somebody on the 2018 Phillies. But this team is still closer to, it's still pretty close to being the 2018 Phillies as far as the pitching staff, the starting pitching staff goes. We wanted to see development on the part of Nick Pivetta, but I think with such a small sample size, you're just not gonna, no one should be changing their mind about Nick Pivetta. I had the same theory about when that brief snippet of news came out about people booing Bryce Harper on opening day. Nobody came to that ballpark and had their minds changed about Bryce Harper. No one was excited to get there and then saw him go 0-for-4 and then decided to boo him. There are people who showed up ready to boo him and people who showed up ready to cheer him. And they both did those things. And I think that's the same thing with Nick Pivetta. I think everybody should just maintain the level of enthusiasm they had for him going into the season. Cause he still has stuff to work on. And that's where the Phillies have just left their rotation at this point. They decided to roll with it with the same back end ambiguity we've seen them roll with for the past couple of years. They still think they can farm something out of the Nick Pivettas and the Vince Velasquez's and Zach Eflin's of the world. And you know, there's maybe different levels of excitement from guy to guy. And this year it's Nick Pivetta who's getting more of the attention, who got the second start of the season. And fortunately, he's playing with a lineup that can bail him out. But at the same time, we're still looking at a guy who clearly hasn't figured it out yet. And if you thought he was going to come out and pitch seven innings, I mean, that would have been terrific. That really would. But unfortunately, we're looking at a guy who's got some pitches to work on. His changeup, his cutter. I mean, he's not. We're just talking about pitchers not having their control. If you're going to be a guy who dances on the edge like that of the strike zone, A, you got to establish it early, and B, you got to have the control to consistently hit those spots. And unfortunately, he just wasn't doing it. I mean, none of the Phillies starters had a really good start in any of these games, and that'll get glossed over. It's amazing how good a productive lineup is at glossing over imperfect pitching starts when even guys like Jake Arrieta are walking six guys. Guys like Aaron Nola don't have their best stuff. Nick Pivetta can blend in with that crowd. So this offense might be a great way for Nick Pivetta to keep a job, because he can give up four or five runs and the team can actually outpace the other team's offense. Unlike the past few years, Nick Pivetta has been on the team. But ideally down the road, he's going to be somebody who can make a win stand up on his own. Unfortunately, we didn't see that guy yet. But again, we're 72 hours into the regular season. So I'm not too concerned, and I don't think anybody else should be either.
Right. No, and if you believed in breakout Nick Pivetta like I did, like you said, Justin, I'm still there, but it was a little bit disconcerting after he looked so good in the spring and the stuff looked so electric that it didn't seem to carry with him into his first start of the season. But he'll hopefully have another 30 or so starts this year to get it
that
all
was
back.
It. And that as was Mac- the one. That was the
that
window.
That was the last one.
And he blew it.
But Mac, you made the point that Matt Klentak has made that a really good offense will help this starting rotation, especially maybe if they have to take a little time to get their feet under them. And so hopefully that's all that was. All right. Before we wrap up and take a look at the week ahead, let's head to the phones. And again, folks, call the Hittin' Season voicemail to leave your thoughts on the start of the season here. And we'll play the best voicemails on the podcast. And I asked for people to call in who attended the games this weekend. And I had a caller check in, and also our good friend, our new friend, the ghost of Harry Callis, checked in this week.
Hey, guys, Hall of Fame broadcaster Harry Callis. I'm heading down to the ballpark today, 4:05 start against the Atlanta Braves, and you know how I know this team is for real? I just took out a second mortgage for two standing room only seats. It's a long way from those days when I could give a scalper an ice-cold Budweiser and he'd give me two tickets to the 700 level at Fed Stadium. Well, with Bryce Harper, it seems like those days are out of here.
I went to opening day with my son, who was 8, and my daughter, who was 7. This is the first game that both of them didn't want to go to the fun zone or the playground. They wanted to stay in their seats the whole time and watch the game. And specifically about Hoskins, they're huge Hoskins fans, have been going back 2 years ago since he came up, and they were worried that Harper, whom they also adore, was going to steal all the limelight. So they couldn't have been happier when Hoskins crushed that grand slam. In fact, my son told me that he is not washing his Hoskins jersey for the entire remainder of the season since we were at that game. And so now I got to sell that to my wife. Thanks for doing a great job on the podcast, guys.
So that's cool, guys. That last caller talking about how his young kids that he took on opening day for the first time didn't ask to go play at the wiffle ball yard. Didn't ask to go to the rock climbing wall. They actually wanted to sit and watch the team play. They wanted to watch all these guys play the whole game. They didn't want to go elsewhere and do other things at Citizens Bank Park. And that's one of the cool things about having a really good baseball team is people are going to be interested in the baseball again. I mean, it's great that Citizens Bank Park has all that stuff, but fans are coming back to this team, the actual players and the play on the field, and that's what's going to get young people interested in baseball as well in this town. And that's one of the cool things that could happen with Bryce Harper, as far as I can see, is if you have a football mentality guy where there's a lot of emotion in the stadium, that's going to draw kids in. And so I think that's really cool. Up next here this week, now big two-game series as the Phillies come to Washington, D.C. It's Bryce Harper's return. And that's what everybody's going to be talking about in baseball. The Phillies have an off day on Monday and then have a quick two-game series in the nation's capital. I imagine that there's going to be a ton of Phillies fans coming down, as much as the Natitude wants to keep Phillies fans out of Washington, D.C. I don't think it's going to happen. So, Liz, what are you expecting when Bryce Harper comes back to Washington, D.C.? Do you think that this fan base cares enough to boo him? Do you think he'll get cheers? Will it be indifferent? What do you think is going to happen?
They're all bitter. All you could see on opening day were people with altered Harper jerseys, like spitefully altered. Like, if there's a team that's going to fight, it might fight with the Phillies. It might be this one. Like, I could see it happening throughout the NL East, honestly, but, you know, there's, you know, the Phillies have bad blood with all these teams, you know, with the Mets, the Braves, and the Nationals, but, like, this is sort of personal. Bryce Harper chose the Phillies over Washington, and Nats fans are feeling bitter about it. You know, he's going to be facing Max Scherzer, I think, in his first start, and it seems pretty obvious that Max Scherzer hates Bryce Harper. It really does. Doesn't seem like Max Scherzer likes anyone, honestly.
Right.
But, you know, I'm excited for games that they play against teams that aren't in the NL East, but I have not been this excited to watch them play the Nationals. Usually I'm just like sitting there thinking, when can they stop playing the NL East? Can they stop because they're getting bludgeoned to death? You know, there's hope this year that won't happen and they're actually going to put up a fight. And I really want to see it because the Phillies, the Mets, the Phillies, the Mets, and the Nationals, and the Braves haven't all been good at the same time for a long time.
Have that many teams ever been? I don't think that those four teams have ever been good at the same time, it feels like.
Maybe not. Like, it's a lot. I'm going to say it now and I'll say it again. If you are voluntarily watching American League baseball, seek help, because there's no, unless they're playing an interleague game, there's no reason to watch an American League team, unless you're watching the Orioles to see how bad they are, unless you're, you know, there are exceptions, but the National League all over the place is where it's at. You know, it's going to be so cool. And I want to see them stick it to the Nationals so bad in their own stadium. Feel it. Feel the sadness and anger. Feel the bitterness and pain. I want all the Nationals fans to feel it.
It's just so funny that we went through all this, that it's starting in 2012. The Nationals really, they made a push, not just in their team, but in their marketing, to be like, no, like, the Phillies are out. The Nationals are in. We're the cool young team. We're going to run this division. Like, everybody get excited. Natitude, all that stuff. Here we are at the end of that cycle. Not only did they never win the World Series with Bryce Harper, but now he's on the Phillies and they look, now they have the chance to do what they never could do for Bryce in Washington.
Right. No, and there's bitterness too. On the back of the Sunday sports page of the Washington Post. Yeah. Somebody drew a cartoon of Bryce Harper walking away after throwing his Nationals jersey in an alley trash can. And so that's kind of where the mindset is here in Washington, D.C.
This is the learner's fault. This is the team owners. People don't talk about it a lot because they have a payroll that will fool people, but they are some of the cheapest owners in all of baseball. They wouldn't pay an extra couple hundred thousand dollars to keep the Metro open late during one of their few playoff appearances. In their franchise history, they wouldn't do it. You know,
don't forget the book bag ban and the locker rental. I don't think that was the owners, but it's still hilarious.
No, it is absolutely. I mean, because people are like, well, the Nationals said that they're not, you know, they don't make any money off of locker rentals, which is a fancy way of saying they're paying us rent to lease the space where they put the locker. So they're not making money directly off of the locker sales. Yeah. But they're making
money. And when has rent ever involved money? So, like, that makes perfect sense.
Their offer to Bryce Harper was $300 million over at least 10 years, but the amount of money is deferred. It was so deferred. It's what the Mets did with Jacob DeGrom recently, which is, you know, listen, if a player wants that, then that's fine. But Major League Baseball has been increasingly uncomfortable with deferred money contracts. And they were so concerned with that Harper contract that the Nationals had offered that they actually spoke to the Nationals about it. They were not comfortable. Yeah. Like that, that's the level we're dealing with. This is not Bryce Harper's fault. If they had given him an offer right. that was worth taking, he would have taken it because he waited all offseason for one. And so Nationals yeah. fans
he just wanted
have
to
no
go...
one to blame but their ownership and their continued support of it. So become fans of other yeah. teams. Do it.
But, I mean, at the same time, we're talking about fan logic here. The whole point from the fan perspective is Jason Worth left us. He could have stayed, but he chose to leave.
Yeah,
like, you're not going to – we can print out some pamphlets and hand them out to Nationals fans explaining why they're wrong, but they're going to feel that
oh,
way.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They should. And they should. It's more fun this way for me
yeah.
personally.
Yeah, logic so has we no can, place in this. I agree.
That's right. That's right. Well, I will say, at least for as far as my son is concerned, my 8-year-old son, he was still excited to see Bryce Harper hit aww. A home run. And the Phillies are like his third favorite team now. He likes the Nats
moving
and the
up
because he grew up here, but we're moving up the list.
Or down, you know, I think. Last I heard, they were second. Damn it.
No, the O's got the O's moved into second. But
oh, we are blowing this.
We're God. Blowing it big, but he's still a Harper fan, and he wanted to watch every Harper at bat. And when Harper hit the home run on Saturday, he was really
aww.
Excited. And so yeah, I think that was really cool. And you know, there are some Nats fans that, you know, I think will be accepting of Bryce Harper coming back. And frankly, there could be more Phillies fans than Nats fans in the seats on Tuesday anyway, especially given how the Nats opening series against the Mets went. There were a lot of empty seats at Nats Park on Sunday. So
honestly,
you might not hear many boos.
It's probably a healthier take. Like if you go through a bad breakup, out of sight, out of mind is probably a healthy way to go about it instead of doing what yeah. we would do, which is show up en masse and harass people. Like that's not as good, frankly, from a behavioral no. standpoint. So just being like, you know what, no. why bother? I can do more productive things with my time. I get that. It's not the greatest sports fan
exactly.
Philosophy, but it's probably a healthier one.
Well, folks, listen, that's going to wrap up episode number 273 of Hittin' Season. But just remember to check out thegoodfight.com. We've got a ton of written content up on the website talking all about the opening weekend. And we'll obviously have your series previews and recaps as the Phillies take on the Nationals this week. And they get the Minnesota Twins at home next weekend, which would be a barn burner of a series. But, you know, we are reveling in all of the Bryce Harperness going on here. Justin and Liz will have a continued success this week. Don't forget to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed so you can get that podcast as well as The Dirty Inning with Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk. And don't forget to check out our Patreon, the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. There's a bonus continued success of Justin and Liz taking a look at The Sandlot 2, which I have never seen, but I was looking at the recap that you guys talked about. It
we did that.
Terrible.
Wow. So, I thought I dreamed that we talked about that for 90 minutes.
No,
but
we
that's
did
real.
Not.
You did.
Wow.
You did. And it's out there for the people to hear. Just sign up on the $5 a month tier, and you'll get that and a ton of other stuff that we have going up there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.